Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. Most people report that their therapy was successful if they feel like they had a strong therapeutic alliance with their therapist. As I discussed in the most recent episodes, one way to measure a therapeutic alliance is through what's called physiological synchrony, where voice and other body movements align. But how, as a practicing mental health therapist, would you assess this real time in your office, especially if you're a participant in therapy? It's hard to see it or hear it sometimes. And how would you intervene if you wanted to encourage it? Well, let's discuss. I started my career early by working with children. So I was relieved to learn, as I started working more with adults, that many of the things we learn as mental health therapists in working with children are easily applied to adults. And in fact, I've found this to be true all throughout the lifespan. And perhaps that's because play is often defined as a rehearsal of sorts for adult activities that will later be required. So play is a necessary function of childhood as a result. And as therapists, sometimes I think we might forget this in our interest of delivering interventions and measuring outcomes and other things. We might forget what one of my mentors reinforced during my doctoral program, and that is that you know when someone is getting better because playfulness resumes. And at a minimum, that drove a lot of my understanding of what I was looking for at first, because a lot of the assessments, you know, there's so many reasons that people fill out assessments one way or another, such that the best, to my experience, that they can provide is sort of a trend over the course of treatment. But if you really want to know moment to moment how treatment is going, one of my mentors, as I mentioned, would suggest that someone is making improvements when they're able to play, whether they're a child or an adult. And perhaps one reason for this is, as many theorists describe, in order to be able to play, a lot of things need to be in place. I'm referring back here to Panksepp. Jaak Panksepp is the one responsible for the field of affective neuroscience, which helps us understand our affects or emotions and how they're tied to the physiology that we share with animals. And so what I'm about to say is true for humans and animals, and that is, he says, quote, "Play only occurs when one is safe, secure, and feeling good." And this makes play a rather sensitive measure that we can start to identify in our work. He also explained a different author, Burghardt, who said that play consisted of 5 criteria, and those include that the adaptive functions of play are not fully evident at the time play occurs, meaning that the reason for play isn't always obvious. 2, play is a spontaneous activity done for its own sake because it's fun. 3, an exaggerated and incomplete form of adult activities. 4, play exhibits many repetitive activities done with abundant variations. In contrast, serious behaviors that are not as flexible, and that's another thing that I often key into too, is when someone's thinking or speaking or feeling starts to increase in flexibility, then I know that things are improving in therapy. And lastly, Burghardt, as summarized by Panksepp, describes animals, so humans inclusive there, must be well-fed, comfortable, and healthy for play to occur. And all stressors reduce play. Think about that phrase. We can just start there. all stressors reduce play. So when stressors are up, play is reduced. When play is up, stressors must be getting decreased. And that's why this has been so helpful to me over the years, to consider just someone's ability to play. Certainly working with children in play therapy was an easy way to have that happen. But with adults, there can be play in a session. You know, people can kind of make plays on words, if you will, or there can be shared stories and sort of jokes and memories between therapist and patient at any age that kind of cause one to chuckle or smile. You know, and a lot of times mistakes. Some of my favorite examples are when I've made a mistake in therapy, and especially with adolescent clients, because they really enjoy laughing at me and with me. So there's lots of ways that play can enter, even if the intervention is not an interactive activity that encourages play. And that's why I spent so much time on that therapeutic alliance idea, is play also can include, in terms of physiological synchrony, one thing that's helpful for me when I do play interventions, say for example with adolescents, and we might play cards or something, the reciprocity or the reciprocal activity of dealing cards and playing cards is a very strong indicator of the physiological synchrony between me and my patient. And I'm watching that especially as rapport is getting built, or in a lot of cases, you can have a play that has rapport to it, but still have the content of session be very difficult. And those are among my favorite ways to work, because it can separate the idea that someone is welcome and appreciated in my office, even if the content of what we're discussing is difficult. And in that way, I think play is a really nice practice for people in session to take out of session and learn ways to interrelate with others that can sustain the relatedness despite the conflict that may be occurring and causing the stressors. All right, so as a reminder, an outcome that we're hoping for in terms of successful mental health treatment includes a therapeutic alliance. That probably is intuitively obvious to most of us who elect to work in this field. But then how do we know if we have a therapeutic alliance? Because it goes beyond people just sort of being acquiescent and saying, yeah, of course, I'll do your intervention. Sounds good. You know, there's ways that people can be compliant in session, and that isn't necessarily a therapeutic alliance. So for me, we want to start thinking about what other ways we can assess whether or not we have a therapeutic alliance. And in the articles from the most recent episodes, authors were talking about physiological synchrony, and it got me thinking about how play is one way to assess physiological synchrony. So you can listen for the rhythmic movements in voice. You can observe the rhythmic movements in, say, card play or other interactive activities. You can even observe the way someone walks into your office and sits down, you know, chair to chair, or however your office is set up. And if it isn't occurring, then for me, I do a couple things. One, I'm really patient. In fact, I'm very patient and kind of slow. Therapy with me is slow, and that's because I'm really interested in building a therapeutic alliance, and that takes time. Relationships take time, and I want to have a foundation of trust between me and anyone. As long as people are safe, then we build that trusting foundation before we really start working on the hard things. And that way, when the hard things come up, we have a foundation to rely on. And so the other thing is, therapy is genuine. I don't do a lot of self-disclosure. I don't mean that. But therapy is honest. When people are frustrated, we talk about it, even if they're frustrated, and especially if they're frustrated with me. When people are disappointed or hurt, we talk about it. And it isn't this sort of glossing over of trying to get somewhere else where things are, quote, quote, okay. Because as we heard from the theories I reviewed just a few minutes ago, play will show up when the stressors are reduced. So when play is genuine and it enters the session in an honest and genuine way, that's a really good sign that things are going well in the therapeutic alliance, and also that things are going well for your patient. I meet a lot of therapists who are worried or concerned that, you know, we can't just play for an hour and have that be useful in therapy. And what I would like to introduce to you or remind you of is that play is a practice for what happens outside of therapy. So no matter the age, someone is getting practiced with a safe and trusting adult who cares for them, and they can take that to other places in their life. That first point that I mentioned in terms of the criteria, the adaptive functions of play are not fully evident at the time play occurs. Whatever play is doing in the moment is just one part of the picture. There's ways that having an experience of safe and fun play can be translated to all kinds of other areas of life. And a lot of times when we're working with children, I feel like that's what we're doing, is helping them build social relationship skills in sessions such that they can take them out of session. I especially do that. And so I think that's what this means for me, is that the adaptive functions, in other words, the way someone develops and makes it through the world, if you will, the adaptive functions of play are not fully evident at the time play occurs, because play is helpful in ways that we don't understand and may not see, because many of them will happen outside of our office. So play is one way we can assess our therapeutic alliance, and it also happens to be one way we can improve our therapeutic alliance when we signal an openness to genuine interaction that done in an environment where patients feel safe and comfortable, then we'll start to see more play enter into our therapy sessions. I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And if you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection Community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. Please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, to learn more. Thanks. Until next time.